Greetings, this is As You Wish Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Gilliland, and we've got a great show. We've got John Kelly on the show, and John's used some pretty interesting technology. I'm going to go further into that, called reverse speech, where they actually reverse people's speech and slow it down and play it backwards. And this is used at sentry points in Israel and other places to find out what the true motive of people are. And so, for those of you can Google it or search out what that is, what that type of technology is. But John's a professional speech analyst who's bold reporting on Iraq war intelligence. I don't think there's any intelligence in war, but but we'll go further than that. 2 years in advance of the 2003 U.S.-led shock and awe strikes against Baghdad propelled his work into the international spotlight, former CBS radio feature producer for WXPT in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mr. Kelly is an advanced meditation practitioner whose training under yogic monks began while he was studying music in New York during the late 1980s. He has an intensive long-term focus on spiritual practices combined with proven skills of detecting secret messages encrypted within the reflections of human speech. Signals provide the foundation for his international Vancouver-based clinical practice. It's developed in tandem with his audio research. John Kelly's unique paranormal imaging catalog documents evidence for higher consciousness and UFO contact through photographic and video recordings. Mr. Kelly also produces the Secret Message Report podcast edition and Secret Message TV, featured on both YouTube and Ustream. So without any further ado, I want to bring John on the show. John, are you with us?
I sure am, James. It's great to speak with you again.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. What I wanted to cover is a couple of things. First is that I know through the reverse speech process, just to introduce people to it, when the first time you did that with me, I think it was when I was on Coast to Coast, which I don't know if that's ever going to happen again, but it was quite interesting. The information that came out in reverse speech, I guess you said I was one of the first people who was saying the same thing forward as backwards, but actually more in depth. I was amazed at the information that was coming through. And just for a couple instances, when I was talking about the large golden ships that fly over the ranch, I was saying they feel like godlike beings, very powerful beings. And reverse speech, I said Sailor Vishnu is his name, which is the Hindu god of preservation. And then the other one was with Mary. I know there's a few others, but there was a picture of Mary's energy coming down over a statue. And they asked, what are the little blue lights around the statue? And I said, they're probably nature spirits or something like that. And in reverse speech, I said, Mary's elves say to love her. So, I mean, it just brings a whole new dimension into the world we live in by going, you know, and doing these reversals, as well as just bringing up more information in every arena, you might say.
Yeah, the mirror is a source of information about the unconscious and other dimensional worlds. It's an archaic idea, and the reversing of speech is simply using a mirror on a graph to anticipate those types of reflections. So it's a fascinating process, and as you said, the information is compelling and enriching, and has many, many different applications. It's an advanced interrogation technique on the one hand, and it's a powerful aid to psychotherapies on the other. So depending on what arena it's used in, it produces a variety of different results. As a journalist and reporter, I was successful in anticipating global events years in advance using this procedure. But I also ran a clinical practice, and we have hundreds and hundreds of case files where I was working with individuals and using these unconscious reflections of the voice as windows into healing and creativity. People said the impact of those sessions was profound, and it was something that's been very helpful in that arena. I think that the issues surrounding secrecy in general in our day-to-day world are headline news. If most people are familiar with WikiLeaks and whistleblowing activities attempting to shed light on where government dollars are really going and what people are really doing in positions of power, and as in tandem with that, the application of this this procedure is very useful in eliciting unconscious disclosures. One of the applications I focused on this last year is the unconscious disclosure of the UFO contactees and witnesses in an attempt to elicit further details about famous contact incidents. I've studied the voices of people like Betty Andreasen, Betty Hill, the Pascagoula incident witnesses, going through historic cases and the media recordings that have been available to try to glean further information about contact and the unconscious information that's in the minds of the witnesses that may, either through trauma or other means, may be suppressed. But these involuntary disclosures do occur. You know, people talk in their sleep, for example. Many of us talk in our sleep, and we know that that is an entirely unconscious process. The unconscious is engaging the speech organs and making speech happen while the conscious mind is inactive. So we know that unconscious speech is real, and this is a form of unconscious speech. It's involuntary, it's unconscious, but it certainly is a wealth of information, and it put my name on the map all over the world for my coverage of a variety of stories. Just this past 6 months or so, I've used this technique on a number of major stories, including the Libya war, the federal elections in Canada, all kinds of different subjects that are covered in my column. I write a column called The Vancouver UFO Examiner for examiner.com, and people can see those studies there. Sammy Hager's alien abduction, the IAEA Director General's UFO invasion concerns over the Fukushima nuclear disaster and all the UFOs in Japan. All of these stories I've covered, and lots of fascinating examples. So it's a contemporary and real phenomena, and it has direct application. And in those applications, it's been very successful in helping people not only in their personal lives, but to gain a better understanding of the world around us.
I think in ancient Greece, they had these chambers, they call them psychomantians, so there's different names for them, where they actually, if somebody was very sick or ill, they would send them down in these chambers, and they would fast, and they would have a pool of water that they would stare into, and they would ask, they would pray and meditate on their healing, what they needed to do, and they would come back with the answer, and then write it on a wall, and the answer they got, and so they end up getting all these like miracle cures, you know, through that process. It sounds like a very, very similar process.
As you say, the use of mirrors and reflections is archaic. So the psychomantium, the feng shui mirror of China, the Taoists using a mirror to access information from other dimensions, the famed Nostradamus predictions written while the seer was gazing into the reflective surface of a dish of water at his desk, the magic mirror of Western folklore and mythology. All of these are pointing to the same thing. In Tantra, modern Tantra, the use of the mirrors is well known in India. This teacher that I studied under was very famous in his community for having a mirror in his house where he would bring people in and have them sit down, and they could see in the mirror. It was like watching television or movies. All their past lives, everything would be played out in this mirror. So the use of the mirror is an archaic tool for access to unconscious information and other dimensional information is everywhere, and this is just another use of a mirroring technology producing profound results. I mean, most of us take things like walking, talking, you know, day-to-day experiences for granted, but we're reinvestigating, you know, fundamental human experiences. Most people are born gifted with speech and hearing ability, and we've been doing it since we were in the womb, but we take for granted the nature of those phenomena. So we're reinterpreting something that's very fundamental, and through that, we're potentially transforming our worldview or our way of looking at everything, you know, with speech as the source. In the Bible, for Judeo-Christian tradition, the word of God is the sound of creation. You know, the universe begins with the utterance of the word. And in the Mahabharata of the Hindu tradition in India, the mouth of God is seen on the avatar Krishna, who, when he speaks, the universe is being formed from his mouth. People see the universe being emerging from his mouth. It's very archaic symbolism. So we all of us have this connection, and what those stories tell us is that, you know, the cosmic connection between our human existence and the nature of speech and language communications is tied into fundamental principles of creativity in the universe. That's what those stories are saying. And when people are in healing and accessing deep creative potential to resolve issues, the voice is playing a role in that. And you see that in many different healing traditions. I was having a talk today earlier with a distinguished alternative therapist about people uttering infantile type sounds, like the sound that a baby makes when it's born during a healing crisis, and that's serving as the turning point, you know, from a crisis into wellness, the expression of sound, that even an infantile kind of a sound can be a powerful waypoint on a healing journey. So definitely using the voice, utilizing the voice, utilizing sound, this is something that we see in many, many different therapies. This is just a kind of a unique way of using it, but it's very effective, and, you know, all that potential in human sound, the voice, can have transformational powers. In yoga, people recite mantras, and the world changes as a result. I mean, there's really substantial potential, and very worthy of exploration, both as, you know, through research avenues as direct experience.
Yeah, we had, speaking of mantras, we had Ginny Lam here that gave us a few mantras to use, and she's been in some of the first movies, that these Chinese movies, you know, with all the martial arts and everything else, and a Qigong practitioner for 40 years or something like that. But, I mean, all her life she's practiced either martial arts or Qigong or some other form, and you know, they do work. I mean, those chants definitely do work.
Yeah, so in Asian traditions, we see that this legacy that, you know, they just pass down information through the generations, the understandings of sound, the role of sound in healing and accessing states of consciousness is definitely part of our ancient past. And so this is, again, it's just a modern reinterpretation of something that people have been accessing in different ways for millennia.
Oh, yeah. There's so many different things. I wanted, before we change the subject, I wanted to ask a couple of things just off the top of your head. I know you probably don't have all these reverse speeches with you, but what are some of the things that are coming up now, let's say with Obama and his plans, or some of the other world leaders? There's a few people in ufology. I would love to see your reverse speech, because I know they are disinformation, you know, people, and have a major agenda going on, and I would love to hear what that agenda is. But you know, going back to some of the other ones, it'd be interesting to see, you know, like kind of where we're headed now with the wars and Libya and everything else.
Well, sure. You know, to give you some taste, I mean, a taste of the research and what the messages were about. Let's go back to Libya, for example, which is now, you know, from an operational perspective, it's full-fledged warfare. I mean, there's hundreds of bomb runs going on, if not, you know, daily. Air Force and Navy engagement and multinational engagement. Canada's out there with jets. America's out there with jets. So it's another undeclared war, so to speak. And there was a challenge, actually, in the U.S. government to call the President Obama on the legal standing by which they're engaged in this. Some of the Senate people said this was illegal warfare. What happened? What did I determine? I was studying the statements of a number of the admiralty in the U.S. Navy from back in March when these strikes began. And there were references in their speech that were very interesting. For example, Admiral Locklear had a message that I wrote about where he said the word saucer of a gray alien when he was talking about strikes and coalition aircraft carriers from France and Italy and ships from the U.S. It seemed like kind of strange and out of place. There was another, Rear Admiral Gerard Huber said the gray Ebony meaning extraterrestrial, like biological entity. It's a Mexican word. Jaime Musan coined that phrase. References to that, references to spaceships. And I heard from respected UFO researcher Bob Dean recently on the nature of the U.S. space program and how it's really moving away from a public program into the U.S. Space Command, the military program, and the integration between the two. It just made a lot of sense to me about there's that Gary McKinnon, the U.K. hacker who broke into the American computers to discover references to off-world space fleets and transfer of personnel between, you know, these ships that aren't naval ships or boats in the water, they're spaceships. To see these people talking during during war activities about alien spaceships and so on, it really said to me something about the Navy's use of, you know, let's say back engineered technologies or exotic ET type technologies, maybe from treaties, as a component of warfare, of modern warfare. I don't know what role they might be playing, but it seemed odd to me that they were talking about conventional strikes using bombs and jets, and they had unconscious messages about alien saucers. In other words, these programs that Gary McKinnon was tapping into are active programs. This isn't something off on the sidelines. The military leaders are talking about it while they're engaged in acts of war, even if it's undeclared war. It's, you know, that bombing is definitely war. So that's Libya, and that's just one of the front lines in the world now where there's hostility. Very revealing. The Fukushima crisis, the radiological crisis that's sweeping across the Pacific Ocean and dosing everybody on the West Coast and across North America with significant levels of radiation. I believe there was a 35% increase in infant mortality in the Pacific Northwest that was discovered through a study by medical personnel, including doctors. Mm-hmm. 35% infant mortality, and this is in the 10 weeks after the Fukushima nuclear incident, which is still spewing radioactive material into the atmosphere. It's a completely uncontrolled disaster. There is no remedy presently for preventing or stopping the flow of radioactive materials from Japan across the Pacific. It's like a Chernobyl on steroids. Mm-hmm. But the reporting in North America is intense levels of suppression in terms of availability of monitoring stations or reporting from those stations or accurate reporting from those stations. I know that in Seattle, which is close to where I live, Vancouver, B.C., there were measurements of up to 5 hot particles per day, which are particles that you can breathe into your lungs and mm-hmm. that will stay there and it will irradiate the tissues there and will lead to cancers and other problems. So 5 hot particles, that people are breathing that in. That's not good. We didn't used to breathe in 5 hot particles, but we are now. Well, I studied the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Administration or Association Director General's statements when the crisis first came out to see what he had to say. And again, I was kind of startled to detect messages regarding ETs and UFOs. I heard him say the words, "See UFOs invade you now." And there's a lot of footage for folks who are following Japanese UFO studies. A lot of footage of UFOs from Japan, including what people perceived to be UFOs flying around during the tsunami that followed the massive earthquake that led to the nuclear disaster. And so the Japanese Director General, Yukiya Amano, had these unconscious comments and expressing concern about alien invasion, implying that humanity's, you know, military-industrial complex is obviously failing as a steward to the planet. You know, with BP oil disaster destroyed the Gulf of Mexico last year. Now we've got Fukushima destroying the Pacific Ocean this year. What will we do next? This perception that we were mishandling our responsibilities and that there was going to be some form of intervention. The message was aligned with statements from a former NATO officer, in fact, a former Canadian NATO officer, who came forward late 2010 and predicted in writing a month before it happened the major New York UFO flap from mid-October of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about it in the book.
He
had inside information. Stanley Fulham was this fellow's name, and he passed shortly. He passed in late in that year, but it was startling to me. I only know a few people who can make predictions about UFOs and that come true. You may know some of them as well, James, but I know very few people who can do that. And I thought it was remarkable that Stanley Fulham was able to pull off that prediction and do it in writing, and, you know, all documented before it happened. And what he said was his concluding remarks in his book had to do with ET intervention in the face of human inability to, you know, protect the environment, because there's other entities and civilizations that depend on the sustaining the Earth and the continuity of the Earth as a healthy, you know, prosperous environment. Mm-hmm. There's other dimensions of reality where beings depend on the resources that we have here. And it's not so, my continued research when I interview and talk to UFO contactees and witnesses around North America, I continue to find information. that the ETs are communicating with them about the availability and the cleanliness of the natural resources, like the conditions of water, for example, in areas where there might be nuclear power plants. And, you know, this theme about water contamination from nuclear mismanagement was something I was studying in Texas in late 2010. In hindsight, when I think about Fukushima and the pollution of the Pacific Ocean, they're dumping all this radioactive water into the ocean, for example, I really thought that theme, you know, was, that theme came, I was picking up on elements of that theme, not necessarily about the Pacific Ocean, but about ET interests in water conditions in the face of the nuclear industry. It's become a very serious issue now. Of course, it's something that's repressed in the mainstream news. It's underreported. There are some good journalists and websites where you can find ongoing information, but the big players who we depend on and who reach the most people are underreporting, which is, yeah, you know, is not good for everyone's long-term health and safety. Nonetheless, yeah.
Bob Salas was here as well, and he was the one at Malmstrom where the ships came in and shut down the silos there, the nuclear missiles in the silos,
and
they were saying that they took these just massive iron gates, you know, they were on top of these silos and just threw them off, you know, with their technology. And there's a lot more happened there than's been said. I mean, there was a much, you know, I'll leave that up to Bob Salas to talk about, but a lot more went on there than we've heard about. But that's up to him, you know, if he decides to disclose that. But they've always had an extreme interest in nuclear facilities, and also have always given stern warnings. Do not, you know, open that can of worms. You know, you can't contain it. You don't know what to do with it, and you don't know what to do with the waste. And so this has been an ongoing theme with off-world visitors. You know, they've been saying again and again, shut down these nukes. You know, there's other alternative energies, and they've actually given us these alternatives. You know, but they've been absconded, you know, by the elite and have not been given to the masses.
They've been shelved.
Pretty much.
These solutions exist, but they're underutilized at our everyone's peril, and that's a situation that can't persist. Somebody's got to change. So it's interesting and it's strange to see in the face of these you know, sort of mundane issues, material world type issues, these more mystical and insightful messages describing contact with other civilizations, and in the minds of leadership. But if Canada's leadership is any example, it seems that there's been long-term ET intervention, you know, in terms of who the political players who eventually become presidents or prime ministers in different countries, having in their life histories having ET contact of some kind involving sightings or even being on board ships in different capacities. USA Today indexed my story on the ET influence on Canada's future that was highlighted in their leadership debate analysis. We had a recent federal election, and the Bloc Québécois leader from Quebec province, Gilles Duceppe, had a really interesting message that described a naked encounter with little brown aliens that came up during the debate, and I thought that was really strange. But it wasn't unlike President Jimmy Carter, who's well known for his UFO sighting, or Dennis Kucinich, congressman, who also, according to Shirley MacLaine, saw a UFO in flight. My studies of President Jimmy Carter's comments revealed information that said not only had he seen a UFO, but in fact he had been on board one and possibly involved in a procedure involving some kind of an implant. I said at the time that the validation would come when it came out that President Carter either had an implant that was removed or he had one or more implants in his body throughout his life. Dr. Roger Lear, who was at the ranch recently, may have something more to say about that. I forgot to ask him when I saw him.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out that he was involved in removing an implant.
So,
but that would be done somewhere else. It'd be done in some Camp David or something.
Yeah, right. Program. Secret procedures, you know, being called in the middle of the night to remove an implant from a mysterious leader. You know, I can see it now. It's just like a spy movie gone on steroids. But my point I'm making is this, that the political leadership evidently have direct contact experience. In other words, that there's some cultivation going on, and this takes us back to ancient themes about the origins of kings, for example, in the ancient world, where they were, you know, they were entitled with, you know, names that meant like sons of God or sons of heaven, you know, that they were appointed by the gods, so to speak, to lead. The cultivation of human leaders through the interactions with higher civilizations, higher beings, possibly have, you know, these exchanges or contacts having tremendous influence on the psychic mechanisms of the nervous systems of the experiencers. Certainly, even just witnessing a close-up UFO sighting, a power-up type event, is profound on many levels. You know, it elicits profound feelings in people and has transformational potential. So, cultivating advanced human potential through different means of contact seems to be a legacy that's not only reflected in these secret messages from modern times, but we can see that in the descriptions of ancient kings and queens, that they were entitled with names that reflected their relationship with the cosmos and the heavens, that they somehow had inherited the crown from the sun gods or the heavenly gods of the past.
It seems like the ancient leaders, I've talked to a lot of people, and they said that, you know, it shifted between to where the leaders and kings and things of that nature were really there to serve the people and to try to direct the people in the highest and best good of the people, not themselves. But now it's shifted into this just unbridled greed program, and now it's everything is, seems to be at the expense of the people and, you know, humanity and the earth. And the leadership now on the planet has just run amok, and actually the people have become, you know, its worst nemesis. There's just no respect at all for, you know, a man, his family, his home, anything. It's just pure greed in process now.
Well, I think there's a lot of cynicism that drives this. There's this hopelessness that drives the perception that I have to amass all the material resources and hoard them for myself at the expense of everybody else because life is short and awful and there's no bright future ahead. And, you know, this kind of cynical, jaded perspective seems to dominate the psychology at the top that drives this kind of short-term initiative where you see either a corporate leader who raids a company's resources or pension fund, for some short-term party, like an Enron type of a scenario at the expense of everybody else, or national leadership where, the lives of others they're willing to roll the dice, you know, with the lives of families and communities, let's say overseas, so that they can satisfy, you know, fill the pockets of a few greedy people at home. This implies a tremendous cynicism and hopelessness, and this is what has to change, is that there has to be this intense grounding and perceptions about a bright future that's available to everybody at nobody's expense, and that everyone can move, we can collectively go there together in a positive and constructive way. This has to change, and to get there, you know, there's a powerful awakening in the hearts and minds of individuals, including these leaders, has to take place, and sometimes it's the role, you know, the civilians have to take a role in trying to foster that and trying to reflect that back to help people to do a good job while they have a chance. While somebody's in power, they can make decisions that could benefit everybody. They can be persuaded by circumstances. What are the civilians doing to help, you know, share that bright ideal and make sure it's not being overshadowed again by these kind of dark motives?
Yeah, it just seems to, you know, there's a lot of politicians that get in there and they, you know, they may have started out okay and on the right track and really thinking they could make a change. And so they have to kind of sell out here and there to get what they want. And then, you know, they have to tell a little lie here and take a bribe here so they can get elected. And, you know, pretty soon they've sold their soul, basically. They're so disconnected. And then they're in fear of being found out for this, you know, and other deeds that they might have been set up with, you know, that they're being blackmailed with. And it just becomes a very black arena. The higher you go up, you know, the darker it gets. And then pretty soon you've lost all sense of what is right or fair or good. You just become part of the system or part of this machine. And it's a very ugly system, unfortunately.
Yeah, so again, it reflects an impoverishment of the soul, of the spirit, of ideas. It's not a natural state or condition. It's like some kind of imposed, structure or belief system. But it's enriching a few at the expense of many to intolerable levels. So, you know, the in the third world, you know, development is coming at tremendous human cost, and in the West, you know, the industrialized world or the post-industrialized world, we seem to have no qualms. You know, we're absorbed. We've become absorbed in petty things of life that are, in the long run, are pretty meaningless. I mean, maybe there are some people, for example, who at the time of their death will look back and try to count how many hockey games they saw. You know, that was like the most important thing in their life, or how many times they went to the mall. You know, that was how many. You know, this stuff that has really no long-term meaning is becoming, is replaced meaning, and there's this void and vacuum. So people like myself, you know, growing up in Western society and enjoying all the benefits of life here, also felt that, you know, this tremendous absence in my cultural education and my outlook, that I had to reform, you know, seek out instruction that would help me to rebond and reconnect with dimensions of life where I could feel there was inherent value in every day, and that that value, you know, extended far beyond my bank account or my title at work or other kinds of status, gimmicky stuff that was, you know, from my personal perspective, just what, on the end of the day, it still wasn't making people happy. We all like to have nice things and nice experiences, and sure, there are, you know, there's costs and expenses involved, but, the soul, you know, within us is more profound and beautiful than anything that we can buy in a marketplace, and that's, you know, that's the old teaching from the Bible about, you know, take the buying and selling out of the temple. It's not about that. It's about honoring and getting into devotion and experiencing life as a flow of bliss. So that has to happen. Radical transformation.
Yeah, they've all taken an oath, basically. You know, you really think about it. They've taken an oath, you know, to serve God and country and whatever. But, you know, that's been twisted to serve corporations and their interests. And, you know, they forgot the basic laws, you know, laid down by Jesus. You know, he said, love God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. Well, your neighbor is extended. You know, it doesn't matter what color your neighbor is, you know, or what cultural, you know, what belief. You know, the one law that supersedes all laws in the universe or whatever is love. That's the bottom line. And I just see no love whatsoever in the actions of the present day system and, you know, these corporations, these soulless corporations and what they're doing. They've come so far away from any service to humanity and the earth, and it become an extreme disservice to both. And, you know, it's sad seeing where it's going, but, you know, and the good news is that, you know, I call them the powers that were, are fast becoming exposed and being seen for what they are, and people are no longer serving, and that world is actually coming to a close. It's on the downward spiral, and it's not too long, you know, before all the banksters and all these other people that have been, you know, just running these unbridled me, greed programs are exposed and fall by the wayside.
Absolutely. You know, our distinguished colleague Alfred Lambermont Weber talks about how God has become, the meaning of the term God has gone from like generator, operator, destroyer to gold, oil, and drugs.
Yeah. And
a
sex.
Long journey.
Yeah. Yeah, the gods most worshipped now are money and sex, basically. Those are the two gods that most people put their attention on. But, you know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, going into this this last conference, this small conference we had here, we had some pretty interesting people. We had Bob Dean here, Michael Tellinger, yourself gave a presentation, a short presentation of some of the things that you filmed here. Brooks Agnew, Jenny Lamb, who am I missing? No, I'm missing,
Mel Fabregas was here.
Oh yeah, Mel. Yeah, good old Mel. Mel is here. He's we have a lot of fun with Mel. He's like part of the family. That's probably why I forgot. But, you know, we had quite a few sightings here. And it wasn't just, a little dot up in the sky. I mean, some of these objects look like suns and were very large and came in and powered up and put on quite a show. Would you love to talk about some of that or even how people can access that footage? Because I know you put it up on YouTube.
Yeah, I've been visiting the East SETI Ranch since, I think, 1998. And over the years, my experience with the UFOs here, you know, grew and developed. It wasn't, I didn't have any major sightings when I first got here. I was able to see some different things, you know, small things, but also it was just the climate here, the environment and the people that I saw profound things going on. So it was only in recent years where I was here when there were major UFO power-ups over the ranch and stuff like that, and I put a lot of thought into how I would like to try to film them, and over a long period of time I put some systems together, and this year I have my latest, you know, rig that I brought up, and I'm imaging in stereo, color and night vision together, and the spectacular sightings, they were so unique and different, like a different type of UFO phenomena happened each night. They weren't the same. The UFOs behaved differently. So on my YouTube channel, people can see a highlights reel. It's just a short reel that I sent out to the press, 2 minutes of highlights showing about 7 or 8 major events. The title on YouTube is called 2011 UFO Contact at the E-SETI Ranch. And the channel where that is located is Secret Message TV. Secret Message TV, all one word, on YouTube. So this shows stereo imaging, which is an interesting technique. It's not 3D stereo, but what it does is combines two different camera systems on one rig that can pan, tilt, and zoom while it's tracking objects. And this allows filming in both color and night vision at the same time of the same subject with two cameras operating in unison. So we know from the data collected through these two instruments that instrumental failure is not the cause of the images, because the chances of two instruments failing at the same time the same way is just preposterous. Statistically, it's very unlikely. Single camera imaging, well, perhaps there could be an issue. We don't know, but this puts that question to rest. Shooting with two cameras side by side, there isn't a camera failure involved in getting those UFO images. Those are real phenomena, and they were spectacular in so many different ways. There are portrayals of UFOs demonstrating fantastic acceleration, UFOs being swarmed by orbs, which I was really surprised to see on camera, and massive UFO power up like a second sun in the sky in the middle of the night. Unbelievable phenomena, really. And the video's only attempt to capture the essence of what happened. I mean, being there was the ultimate experience of it, but the videos do provide a record that these things did happen, and they'll also provide a lot of educational materials, you know, for further study and analysis of the events to attempt to learn more about the propulsion systems and the interactions of the UFOs as they change colors during flight, for example, or their luminous intensity, or just their ongoing interaction with the ground-based light systems that people use to illuminate them in their flight, and how people say, and I think rightly so, that there is light communication is going on between the ground and the air. There's this call-and-response activity. Now, not only do I have substantial documentation of the UFOs flying over the ranch, but the Mount Adams lights, the lights on Mount Adams, which essentially are like UFOs on the mountain, also engage in these light communications and power-up activities. They split into two and re-merge into one light. And I think you've pointed out to me, James, that this is like a nationally designated wilderness area where there's strict laws governing the hauling heavy equipment up the glacial ice fields on the side of the mountain, which is still covered in snow, and staying up there all night, shining lights down on people in a field, you know, freezing to death with this heavy equipment illegally on the mountain. It doesn't make any sense at all that there could be people up there with heavy equipment and generators to make these lights shine. 13 miles distance, you know, if we read about the 2.5 million candle power flashlights that you might put in your backpack when you're going hiking, it's reasonable to think someone could carry that. Those are only rated for 1 mile range. We're talking about lights that are visible to the naked eye from 13 miles away that behave just like the UFOs in the air, except they're on the ground. It's more than mysterious, to say the least. But it really ties the catalog of phenomena here at the E-SETI Ranch into other well-known phenomena, such as brown mountain lights down in the Atlantic coast. I think it's one of the Carolinas where that's taking place. People are seeing lights on the brown mountains, Marfa Desert lights, the canyon lights that I'm filming up in the Okanagan region of British Columbia. These are interrelated phenomena. One doesn't necessarily exclude the other. And, providing fascinating place to perform all kinds of different research. I think there's lots of curiosity. I know I've talked to some of the staff here at the ranch about their experiences, either taking small plane trips up by the mountain to go investigate to see the portal areas that, where we see the lights coming from, or possibly going up there during the season to hike up around those areas. But I think you've explained quite clearly about the impassable nature of the terrain on the mountain in terms of moving heavy equipment up there. It's just not something that's feasible, and again, it's something that's entirely restricted. There's major mm-hmm. restrictions on people bringing heavy equipment up there. It's not going to happen, not even snowmobiles.
No. The I always tell people go, "Oh, you're just filming a snowmobile." And I said, "Well, you show me a snowmobile that can go down solid ice, an ice glacier, and then go off a huge lava face, a cliff, and then hit the lava rocks on the bottom, and then traverse across these giant lava. It's a huge lava field, with boulders that are bigger than houses. I mean, and cracks in them, and you can't even walk across this field. You have to, because you keep hitting these big crevices where you either have to try to jump it or figure out some other way of going around. It's a big labyrinth. But these objects start off at the top of the mountain. They go down glaciers. They go over lava cliffs, lava faces, drop down over sheer, just unpassable terrain. And I went up there and I filmed that area. There's one little trail you get up above it, and you can film down and up the area that these objects come in on. And there is no vehicle that can do that. It would have to be a hovercraft and some kind of anti-gravity or a hovercraft would be the only thing that could possibly do something like that. And even that, I don't think. I've never really seen a hovercraft go over a cliff,
We're talking about major gear in this area. Let's talk about the military helicopters. Let's talk about those pieces of equipment. My story about the military helicopters, that the Chinook-type helicopter that I taped hovering over the, basically probably twice the height of the trees. We're talking near ground level, basically conducting surveillance on the land, on the ranch, on the Friday before the gathering, was significant, and it was that story. In fact, was indexed in the Dallas Morning News. They thought there that story was of substance as well. The fact that there's this military incursion in this peaceful and secluded location where all these UFO contact is taking place, and I think the message of the story was: you can't stop the contact, you can't intimidate people on the ground, and you certainly can't. From your reporting, James, you can't chase those UFOs down and stop them from flying around here. They're not stopping either. It's not going to stop.
We have some
military helicopters are here.
Yeah, we have some footage of a helicopter chase with a UFO, and it's just hilarious because the UFO is just blipping out and appearing behind the helicopter, and it would turn and try to vector in on it again, and it would appear. It would just disappear and appear behind it again, and it was just jumping all over the place, and the pilots were just like, every time they would try to find it, it was behind them. It was kind of hilarious watching it, but it's like a no contest. And they bring in, we have footage of F-15s coming in here, and they're all black, no markings on them whatsoever, treetop level, strafing the house, trying to catch these UFOs. And, it's kind of a no-brainer. If they would just stop and shift their consciousness into a peaceful reality and invite them and say, "Hey, who are you guys? We would like to know who you are and how can you assist humanity and the earth." If they just shifted that consciousness, then they would probably be flying those ships, and have access to technologies beyond their wildest dreams, but not with our aggressive nature that we have now and this, not with the greed and the corporate interests that, running the country. It's not feasible to have that kind of technology. But unfortunately the power elite do have a lot of that technology, and they have already back engineered, the anti-gravity, the counter-gravity, and the fuelless energy, and have been playing with that for some time, but it's no match for the benevolent off-worlders. They're the ones with like full use of creational energies, and they have technologies where they can actually bilocate as you film, their ships can actually bilocate into two or three. I've seen four, one ship become four. And it's pretty amazing, you know, the technology they have. It's more of a spiritual technology, which supersedes anything that we're playing with.
So this is the thing. There's great symbolism in when we see the UFOs. I mean, there's tremendous implications about issues like freedom, you know, freedom from energy enslavement, for example, or economic enslavement, the freedom to travel and to traverse not only this world but other worlds. It's all implicit in the factual existence of the UFOs and the ETs who govern those technologies. It says that could be us. You know, we see ourselves here slaving at the gas pump on our $5 a gallon expenses. And what are we doing? You know, what are we doing, playing with this dinosaur technology that only serves a few, when all around us at locations like you said, all around us is evidence of higher technologies and free energies that we need to harness in order to get to the next stage of development and growth and civilization, where we can ensure energy resources up, you know, for everybody, and from that, you know, the potential of new industries, new employment, for example, new means of transportation, and all of the great interactions that can come from that. So the symbolism of the UFO, you know, is the freedom, this great freedom that we aspire to, you know, the land of the free, the home of the brave. I mean, this is inherent in philosophy about this part of the world. It's our future selves who could be governing these amazing ships and using them to engage in cosmic commerce and educational and cultural journeys for scientific and other purposes. I mean, it could be us. So definitely, it's the pop, you know, that it awakens to just to be the witness to these things, awakens that feeling within us that we could be as free, that we could be liberated in this lifetime. Such things are within our grasps. You know, in some ways, I'm just an average person who came to a special place to have these experiences, and just as so many have come here. You know, the phenomena are as accessible. Those technologies are accessible. Those experiences are accessible. Part of it is us believing and stepping up to the plate to accept responsibility for our part. But the universe is playing in this direction. It's saying to us that, you know, we have this terrible narrow, as a society, we have this incredible narrow focus on the nature of reality and our potential as a civilization. It's jading us. It's creating despotic governments, and it's leading us in a hopeless direction, including total destruction of the Gulf of Mexico and Pacific Ocean and quality of life in North America and all around the world due to our mismanagement of resources, to benefit only a very few at the top, and to destroy the lives of so many. It's not right, and we don't need to live like this either. We can correct our path. We can make choices. If someone was the head of a family and they saw their kids, engaged on a path that would lead to certain peril, a good parent would at the very least, you know, do their best to educate people, the kids, mm-hmm. about choices. And our good community leaders are providing this kind of education as well. We need to reach more people with these good messages and good information, and to let them know that the alternatives are alive and well, but that it's up to us to take our part to ensure that these things have a future, not to let them become sequestered in the basement of the Smithsonian Museum or the Los Alamos Laboratory, you know, where they're out of public sight, and that we could implement these, you know, transformational changes can be buried for another generation. People forget things so quickly. We forget the Vietnam War and the protest movements and how many people fought to overthrow that wrongful, you know, invasion of Southeast Asia, and then here we are, you know, about a generation or so later, more than ready to go again, march into someone else's country, and do all kinds of damage, not only to ourselves, to poison ourselves with the depleted uranium, but to poison those environments for future generations and to undermine the integrity of those societies. These are all, you know, we forgot the lessons of the past. People fought and died to protect some certain values and principles, and those values and principles don't seem to hold as high a place of respect now in our present culture. We've been degraded in a number of ways, and we're not making our best decisions as a result. We're not thinking clearly. We're not clear on who we are and what the meaning of our lives is. Who are we to go and tell others how to live?
You know, I know the core exit in the Gulf, Gulf oil spill there, they have some small, like, island communities, and they were having, just the birth defect, and actually stillborns were up, like, it was insane, the numbers, like 100%, you know, things of that nature. And now we've got, you know, the Fukushima that you were talking about. And you look at this, you know, the Gulf oil, Fukushima, the astronauts, you know, blowing up in space, sending them up on firecrackers, and, you know, the plane crashes that we're having and things like that. All of these things would not be happening if we allowed these fuelless energy technologies and these anti and counter-gravity technologies to be employed. And we could be building planes that couldn't crash, that would have a protective field around them as well. You know, we could be flying, you know, to the moon and the Mars, like Bob Dean said, we've been doing for quite some time, for almost 30 or 40 years, you know, that we have a secret space agency that's back engineered a lot of this technology. And we've been going back and forth to the moon and the Mars and Mars for a long time. You know, and I've heard this on the inside from special people, and I know Andrew Basagio what's the girl's name?
President Laura Magdalene Eisenhower.
Yeah, Eisenhower. All of these people have been blowing the whistle off this, as well as many others. So, you know, it's like it's time for this elitism or whatever it is to end, you know, and shift. And I know with this ninth wave, this unity consciousness wave that's coming through, it is hammering on anything that has that separative me, you know, tyrannical power over others program going. They're not going to make it through these shifts and through these waves of energy coming through. And you can see right now it's just shaking them up, exposing them, and they're being seen for what they are. And they're very, very poor. You know, they may have power, and they may have, you know, some wealth and some power, but really on a soul level and on a universal level, these are very, very poor people and unconscious people, unfortunately. But the problem is that we're allowing them to, you know, to be our leaders. And I think that's going to be coming to a close the more these new energies come in and the further we get into this shift. It's a no-brainer. It's going to fold in on itself. We've just got, you know, a couple minutes left, so before we sign off, what's the best way that people can connect with you and look into some of your research and some of your amazing footage that you've been taking here at the ranch?
Well, my foundation website is yourinnervoice.com, and that's a hub that links out to my column on Examiner. It links to Secret Message TV, my video channel. It links to the Secret Message Report, which is my podcast. Of course, I'm on Facebook, John Kelly, J-O-N-K-E-L-L-Y. And I have a toll-free number if people want to inquire about private sessions with me, find out more about secrets from their unconscious speech, which is 1-888-453-0751. That's 1-888-453-0751. So I do hope that people take advantage. I'm offering a lot of diverse information in a variety of niche areas, and I have cutting-edge materials in each of these areas that I've cultivated. I've been very fortunate to be in the front lines in so much research and so much alternative type of research and have these amazing experiences and to be able to share them with the public and to learn so much through both the feedback I get and the direct experiences that I'm having.
Great. Well, you know, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and also, you know, all of your hard work out there in the field. I mean, John's been standing out there every night here till God knows when in the morning filming these UFOs that are coming in and it's quite a dedication, you know, to do that. And, you know, my hat's off to you for your perseverance in this endeavor.
Well, you know, I would never have thought of doing it if I hadn't seen how you yourself had you know, pioneered in this area and brought the Mount Adams, Trout Lake, Yosemite Ranch UFO phenomena. You put it on the map, James. You're one of the great videographers in this region. You produced historic footage and to be able to follow in your footsteps in this way on your ranch, you know, to interact with the ETs that are here and all the other amazing phenomena that happen here daily, it's a tremendous gift. And I want to thank you again for letting me be your guest and to be here with you.
I always say East Eddy is where debunkers come to die. You know, so you know, basically you can't stay here very long without, you know, having some kind of experience that just pushes you over the edge.
Yeah, this place is not only an amazing research facility, but it's a growth and healing facility, personal development, learning, educational center. There's ongoing teachings and trainings that take place here, as well as gatherings with diverse leaders, thought leaders from all over the world. And the people who come, who are attracted to hear the message and come to this place, are sparkling jewels, and you know that they're going to take good things back to their communities. And that the purpose of the work you're doing here is uplifting everything.
Boy, Michael Tellinger sure dropped a bomb, and so did Bob Dean when they were here, about our ancient history, how it's not as we've been told, and about the secret space programs, and there's just so much information coming out. And, you know, no wonder we're getting so much resistance, you know, because definitely over the top. But anyway, you know, I guess we're out of time here, so I can't thank you enough. We're going to have to sign off. You know, again, keep up the great work, and we'll talk soon.
That's great, James. Look forward to seeing you on the Skywatch.
All right. It's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. And, you know, on this 4th of July weekend, I would get out and start watching the skies, because there's some crazy things flying around. And it's just not over East Eddy Ranch. This is happening globally. And there's footage being taken around the world. So if you just get out, you know, and sit outside, say a little prayer, whoever you want to connect with, and put your intention out that you want to have a benevolent contact, and that you just want to know. You want to know the truth. And put your intention on that you'd like to see a ship or have a sighting or have a connection, and see what happens. Who knows? You know, it's been done here redundantly, and it works. So anyway, have a great 4th of July, and we'll talk to you next Saturday at 8 o'clock. Good night.